tuatai te wā mō Scorpio Book Spotlight e arotake ana I ngā puka puka pāpai.
Yes, that's right. It is time for the Scorpio Books Spotlight because Scorpio Books sponsors my Tuesday show. Today on the line with me right now is Josh. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Liam. How's it cooking?
You know what? It's not too bad at all. You know, I'm just desperately waiting to be off work for the year.
Just the usual.
But tell me, are you a Christmas, like, big into Christmas? Do you enjoy it?
I enjoy Christmas. I feel like I never really feel the Christmas spirit until about the 23rd, but when I do, I'm into it, you know?
Nice.
But I'm not someone who gets into it too early, I would say that.
No, I respect the hell out of that. Go, like, short and sharp with it. Like,
exactly.
Really passionate.
I'm going to have a great 3 days, but none of the build-up.
Ah, fantastic. I like that. Anyway, Josh, tell us, what book are you spotlighting today?
Well, today I'm spotlighting a fantastic book in a completely unprecedented move for me. It is a sci-fi book.
What I know, it's shocking. A shock.
Hold your mouth agape, I'm sure. this one is called A Memory Called Empire by Arkady Martin. It is just a beautiful, beautiful novel. It does have a sequel, which I'm anxiously awaiting to get to, but haven't quite got round to yet. But yeah, it's a wonderful book. It does something that I think a lot of sci-fi does really well. I think it's something that sci-fi is kind of the best at, which I think that sometimes there's issues, you know, that exist within our real world, but I feel like sometimes writing about them, you know, in the context of how they actually happen in our lives can feel a bit like, yeah, we know it, you know, like, yeah, that's an issue, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like sometimes obfuscating it out just a little bit, putting it in a new context, putting it in a sci-fi world, kind of frees people up to examine the issue in a different way, right?
Like, absolutely.
When it's that kind of in the real world, you think, yeah, well, I know about this, I've seen it before, or else when it's in this, it gives you a bit of a fresh perspective. So basically the general spoiler-free plot is it's one of those names that you read and your brain just kind of like reads it, but then when you go to pronounce it out loud, you're like, how do I actually say this? So I'm gonna give it my best shot.
Okay, yeah.
But the Tiak Kalania Empire, something like that. You may read it differently when you read the book, but that's kind of how I read it in my head.
Right, okay.
Galaxy-spanning empire, they, you know, in multiple systems, they have the jump gate network to go to all these places, et cetera, et cetera. But the book focuses on Mahat Dizmia, who is from a mining station. So they don't live on planet. They live in these 12 kind of space stations, which they're familiar with the empire. The empire is around them, but they technically are not part of it yet. They're still a sovereign state, and they would like to stay as such. And they find out, this is like, you know, first chapter of the book, they had an ambassador who was at the capital of the empire. And they get a request saying, we request a new ambassador. They don't know what's happened to the old one. They don't know what's going on. So Mahat is the new ambassador. So she gets sent off to the heart of the empire, finds out fairly quickly that her predecessor is not doing too well, and has to kind of navigate the realms of interplanetary politics on her own, whilst trying to both keep her place independent, you know, not cede sovereignty to this galactic spanning force, but also it's kind of a balance between, you know, she kind of loves the empire, she grew up learning about the empire, she understands imperial language, she read their books, she read their poetry, and now she's here and she's kind of conflicted between her love of this place that she's finally got to reach and also her kind of, you know, national identity, not wanting to be completely overturned
by this place.
Yeah, I'm sure you're starting to see some of the real world parallels of imperialism.
Totally. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, and it's just done fantastically. I think the empire itself is very much, it's world building, I think, in a different way than other places do it. That was a terrible sentence. But, you know, rather than talking about kind of where everything is and a big map of the empire and, you know, they control this and they control this, it's much more about the culture of the empire. You know, she spends most of the book in kind of the main, you know, political hub of this place.
Yeah, right.
And the empire is very, it's very poetic, even the way they send messages to each other are all, like, coded with a poetic, like, kind of phrases used to unlock the code to these messages.
Yeah, and she kind of talks
early on about, like, but everyone can do this, like, it's not even a hard cipher. You know, it's not like you're actually... Yeah, you're not protecting anything. And they're like, yeah, that's not the point. The point is that, like, they're just so kind of into this doublespeak and poetry and hiding meaning behind meaning that, like, there's all these kind of ritual symbolism behind these things, even if they don't actually have a, you know, logistical purpose.
Oh, I sort of love that, actually.
Which is super interesting and not something I've really seen much before. The other very cool thing that they do is, so the station. They have this technology called an imago machine, which basically, as you live your life, you have a small machine implanted in the base of your skull that basically records your memories, who you are, your personality, kind of records everything about you. And then when you die, that imago line can be passed down to the next person, and so they then gain access to your memories and your personality, et cetera, et cetera. So
they
talk about some of the imago lines are like 14 generations deep, you know?
So, wow.
So she starts this with the imago machine of her predecessor. Unfortunately, they only have one that's about 15 years out of date because he hasn't come back to the station to kind of, you know, re-upload what he's got. And that kind of forms another kind of interesting crux of the book is, you know, to the Empire, they don't know about this technology, and part of it is that, you know, maybe she couldn't tell them. But, you know, the idea of that type of surgery would be very taboo to them. It would be very bad. It would be very kind of like, you're not you anymore. And it's kind of hard for her to explain to people throughout the book, like, I'm me, I'm just me. Like, the image I put in kind of filters into me. Like, I don't become them, they don't become me. We become a new person, more me than it is them in a certain extent, which is just a very cool tech
thing. I can't think of anything kind of similar.
Definitely. And again, it's something that I think works very... It's something that sci-fi can do really well where other genres can't necessarily. It also, I think, follows the line more of, I think, the translation state that I talked about maybe last time or the time before, where, you know, it doesn't get too into the nitty-gritty of how these technologies work.
It's more about how
these technologies influence the culture in which they exist in, which is, in my opinion, a more, you know, interesting thing to read about. As good as it is sometimes to know kind of the ins and outs of how tech works, for the most part, it's not that interesting unless you know how it affects the world.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, and it's just, it's very good. It's got definitely a lot of real-world kind of parallels with certain cultures. I think I was reading one review that I didn't really pick up because I'm not super knowledgeable on Aztec culture, but apparently it's very similar to that in a lot of the ways. You know, sacrifice is like a thing in the empire. You know, the poetry, there's a lot of like flowers and colors and all these kind of things. It's very kind of like political drama, but in a sci-fi world that kind of gives it certain abilities to do that type of political drama in a different way, I suppose.
God, there's so many factors to the story here.
I think it's there's definitely a lot going on. I think the main character Mahit is great at navigating the reader through that. I was so unbelievably happy to see a female protagonist in a book whose main character trait is not that they're like nervous and shy, but like really smart underneath it, you know?
Yeah, right.
Like she's just confident, like from the start. She's like outwardly talks about how she's an extrovert. She's happy to talk to people. She's happy to navigate this thing. Like, you know, obviously she has moments of fear and trepidation as anyone would, but
it was
very nice to read about a female character that was, you know, strong, but not in like a, I'm shy, but I'm still strong underneath. It's like, that's good. And there's lots of characters that are that, and it's good, but it's a plot device that I've seen, you know, quite a bit.
So it was nice
to kind of have a strong female character that was just outspoken, clever. They picked things up fast. They were happy to talk about things with people. You know, they kind of have internal struggles, but they don't kind of fold in on those. They're like, that's something I'm going to deal with, but the work needs to be done. I need to move forward. I need to kind of get this thing rocking, which it's just very refreshing, I suppose, to see that and to kind of have a character that leads you through the story with agency and with purpose. And feel like, rather than them kind of being dragged along by these other people, it was like, you know, they're going to use the other people and they're helpful, but at the same time, they have their own goals, motivations, passions, and they're going to act upon those in their own way, which was very nice to see.
Yeah, you're right. That is such a overused trope, really.
Definitely. And it can be good. It can be good. I'm not trying to hate on it, but, you know, you've read it. Once you read it several times, you think, I would like something else.
Totally. Change is good. Yeah. Change is
good. Definitely. And I think just the political drama of it all was just amazing. The empire itself and the way they talk about empire and imperialism and kind of, you know, even the, you know, they're kind of, even the emperor himself, it's like, even if lots of people within the empire maybe aren't always on board with expansion, it's like, how else does an empire exist except to kind of take on new things? Like, you have to do that. An empire has to kind of have some forceful control every now and then to kind of reinforce its own ideals of strength and prosperity. It's just a very fascinating examination of that kind of landscape.
Oh, very well described there, Josh. I have to say, you've done a very good job.
Thank you. I try.
One more time, what was that book called?
It is called A Memory Called Empire by Arkady Martin. It's the first book in the Tiaxalan series. That's me trying to say it again. So there's a second one out called A Desolation Called Peace, which I haven't unfortunately got to yet, but I'm very excited to read it after this starting point.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to keep us updated. Josh, this will be the last time I talk to you this side of 2023.
It will.
So, hey, thank you so much for joining me so many times this year. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No problem.
And you've brought for us quite the array of books this year. So, hey, look, I very much appreciate all you do for us and Scorpio Books. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful Christmas, and I'll see you in 2024.
Yes, you shall. Now, behave yourself this summer break. Don't do anything too silly.
I'll try my best. You know, I am fond of the silliness, but I'll keep it in check.
Have a great day, Josh.
All righty, you too.